Good morning, ladies. We are studying today Parashat Shofetim. I ask your forgiveness about last week's no show. I was intending to be here at the class, but I had a flight that was delayed, so we weren't able to make it back from the airport on time. But you all get credit as if you attended the class, and I guess I get credit as if I gave the class. Maybe that would be easier every week. We just don't come and we'll all get credit. But we won't learn anything. That's the problem. We're studying Parashat Shofetim, which literally means judges. It's based on the first pasuk of the Parashat that says, Shofetim v'shoterim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. The pasuk writes that we have an obligation to appoint judges and officers in all our cities, which is a halakha about judges, about the court system. In order for a nation to exist in a Torah state, you need judges that are going to create the law. There's always questions that come up. Halakhot, you have to know, is it right or wrong? Is it permissible? Is it forbidden? Is it kosher? Is it not kosher? So many times there's legal questions that come up in halakha. People have business questions. Is it ethical? Is it not ethical? So therefore you need a court system. You need shofetim. And it's not enough to have one big Supreme Court, but you need to have courts in every single city. In every single town where there's Jews living, you need to set up a system of courts, shofetim. But besides shofetim, the Torah says you need shoterim. Shoterim would be enforcers of the law. It's not enough to have a judge that litigates and makes laws, but you need somebody that's going to make sure that the people are following it. So that would be like the leader, or the rabbi, or maybe even more serious, like a policeman you had in the olden days, that made sure that the community that they were living in, that the law was being followed, that halakha, that Torah was being practiced. Otherwise it would just be bedlam, it would be just confusion. So you had shofetim v'shoterim v'chol she'arecha, in all your gates, meaning at the gate of every city, you had the court set up with an enforcement agency making sure that everybody conforms. There's a rabbi called the Hida. He explained this pasuk in a different context that would be maybe more applicable for us. After all, we're not setting up any court systems, we're not setting up any police houses. So he explained it like this. Bechol she'arecha, which literally means in all your gates, may not only refer to the gates of your city, but may refer to the gates of your body. He says human beings have different senses. Their sense of sight is a gate. Through a person's eyes, he downloads information into his brain based on what he sees. Everything that a person looks at, it's a picture, it's a camera. And that becomes now etched in a person's memory. A person has ears. What he listens to, the sounds, the talk that enters his ears, it's a gate. And that information is going to affect his personality, his behavior, his way. But Chida says you have to believe that. That we are a product of what we see and we're a product of what we hear. And therefore, it's not enough, like people want to say, I'm only responsible for my actions. As long as I don't commit any action that's wrong. So if I look at something that's not proper, or I hear something that's not proper for me to listen to, I didn't damage anything, I didn't damage anybody. No harm was done. Now, Chida is telling you, no, the opposite. Just like we say, you are what you eat. You are what you see and you are what you hear. All those things influence a person. They did studies, for example, children that watch television, not only children, adults that watch television and watch violent shows, that undoubtedly affects their behavior and it makes them more violent. Not like they thought to say many years ago, it's fantasy, well, it's only a show, you think it's going to affect somebody's behavior. The big scientists, or whatever you want to call them, the big universities, not that we needed a scientist from Harvard to tell me out of bed, but they're saying today that what you watch on television is going to influence you. God forbid, if a person is involved in immoral behavior, just looking at it and involved in it, that's going to influence his values. That's going to dilute a person's moral compass. And therefore, you definitely have to be careful of what we look at and what our children look at. When a mother puts a child in front of a television, she's influencing that child. And when it's not monitored, God forbid, the child could be influenced by the most destructive forces, and that becomes etched in his mind. What a child listens to, what a human being listens to, I'm saying children because they're more impressionable, but human beings are impressionable. Whatever a person listens to, it's going to affect them. And therefore the Torah is saying, you must put judges and you must put officers on your gates. Your gates meaning your eyes and your ears. You must be vigilant what you allow yourself to look at and what you allow yourself to listen to. And more importantly, what we allow our children to watch and read and what we let them listen to. Even music today that our children listen to can have such a detrimental negative influence on their behavior and even more poorly on their soul. All the different types of music with the lyrics of rap, whatever they call it, it's destructive even in its beat, it's destructive, all the more so in its words. How careful we have to be not to expose ourselves to such things. Unfortunately, the government is not doing their job, or they're not interested, even though they created a rating system. But a rating system is according to what they think is immoral, not according to what we think is immoral. When they rate a picture, rated R, rated PG, that's what they think. They didn't ask rabbis, they didn't sit with a bad dean to decide what exactly is right or wrong. These are people that themselves do not have the highest values, but they decide, yeah, we think it's okay. Who are you? What are you? We don't follow your values, we're better than you. And therefore we really have to be very, very careful. As it is, society is falling apart. Now to expose our children and ourselves to these type of things would only be much more detrimental. Hence, shofetim v'shoterim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. In all your gates, be careful what you see, your eyes, and be careful what you allow yourself to listen to. Thank God today there's so much good things to listen to in the world of Torah tapes, in the world of Jewish music, that there would be really no excuse today to allow ourselves to listen to all the other trash that's on the radio and all the other things that are on different, the internet, God forbid, how much problems are we suffering from the internet because people are allowing themselves to surf into dangerous areas, and God forbid, it's ruining them, it's ruining their marriages, it's ruining their lives. The rabbis knew this some 2,000 years ago. Watch your gates, watch what you look at, it's going to affect you, it'll make you a worse person, and watch what you hear. One rabbi called the Sfat Emet, he made a nice observation. There's a difference between a judge and an officer, a shofet and a shoter. A shofet, he's making a judgment. He has a case in front of him, and he has to deliberate. Is it right? Is it wrong? He has to look at both sides. He has to analyze. He has to get the information. A shofet has to look at the entire picture, the entire story, and then he makes his judgment. A shoter, however, the enforcer, it's not up to him to deliberate. His job is to enforce the judgment. It's not up to the policeman to decide, well, you know, I don't think, we're not asking you to think or not. That's the judge's job to think if it's right or wrong. Once the judge decides guilty, it's the job of the officer to do his job. It's not for the officer to start to deliberate and question and I don't know. The judge can deliberate. But the officer, the shofet, has to execute.
So the Sfat Emet said that in life we're all judges, we're all shoftim, and we're all shoftim. We're constantly making decisions of right and wrong. A parent might say, I agree with you, Rabbi. Television is very detrimental. Even though you're right, you have a few channels that talk about animals and a few channels that talk about things that mean nothing, or the weather and some sports. But out of 800 channels, there's 6 channels that are good and 794 that are bad. So you're right, I agree with you. In general, men kissing on television is no good. We shouldn't have it. Oh, very good. You're a shofet. Shofet? You're a judge. You came out with a ruling. It's no good. Okay, now be a shofet. Enforcement. When it comes to enforcement, well, you know, my husband, my wife, my kids, and this and that, the maid. And then already, we have a very difficult time enforcing what we already judged as right or wrong. There should be no gap between the judgment that we rule, and I'm not telling you how to judge. This is after you come to your own rationalization if it's right or wrong. Of course, following the Torah. Person says, you know something, you're right, Rabbi, it's important to come to class. I came to the conclusion, it gives me a different perspective, it gives me motivation, it's the right thing. Shofet, I judge, it's the right thing. Beautiful. Do you go to class? No. What happened? Well, the schedule, I'm busy. So you see, there's always a dichotomy between what we judge as right or wrong and what we do. The shofet can deliberate, but once you decide if it's wrong, you have to execute, you have to be a shoter. Once you decide something is proper, you have to do it. You can't question or second guess, especially when it comes to the halakot of the Torah. The next pasuk says, a few pasukim later, tzedek, tzedek, terdof, which literally means righteousness, righteousness shall you pursue. Again, it's talking to the judges. They have to be honest. Don't accept bribes. Don't slant the judgment. Don't tilt it. Don't show favoritism. Tzedek, tzedek. You have to be righteous in the courtroom. All the rabbis ask the obvious question. Why does it say it twice? Tzedek, tzedek, terdof. Should say, tzedek, terdof, pursue righteousness. What do you mean, tzedek, tzedek? What's the double language? The explanation might be based on an interpretation that the Kutzker Rebbe said. There's a big debate amongst the philosophers of the world. Do the ends justify the means? What does that mean? A person has a great idea, and he has a great goal, and he has a great end. He wants to accomplish something. But in order to accomplish it, he has to step on a few people's feet, he has to embarrass somebody, he has to maybe steal or do something that's improper. The bottom line, once it's done, it'll be a great thing. But to get there, he might have to be a little less than honest, he might have to compromise some values. So the question is, do the ends justify the means? Do we say that if the ends is okay, then however you get there, it doesn't matter, just get it done. For example, the communists, they felt that communism is going to save the world. Division of wealth. Capitalism is not fair, they said. Why should you have some people very rich and some people very poor? You know what? We're going to divide the wealth. Everybody will be equal. But if you know history, that in the route to communism, millions of people were killed throughout Russia. Even more people that were killed during the Holocaust. Millions of people. How is it justified? Well, in the name of getting there, we might have to kill some people, but if we can get the communism, then the world will be okay. So this was the price that we had to pay to get there. They believed that the end justified the means. Somebody might feel that this is a proper approach when it comes to religion. Person, for example, wants to come to the synagogue. He wants to pray. Beautiful thing. but there's no parking. So he says, well, the guy living next to the synagogue has a driveway. I'll block his driveway. What are the odds that he's going to need to pull his car out for that half hour that I'm in the synagogue? And therefore he blocks the guy's driveway. He comes in. And he asks, how could you block a guy's driveway? What do you mean? He might not come out. That's not up to you to decide if he wants to come out or not. You can't block his driveway, even if there's a sign that says, I'm not leaving for another 2 hours. What's the difference? It's his driveway. No, but I have to go pray. What do you mean? Isn't praying more important than blocking a driveway? So the Torah's approach is, the ends do not justify the means. You can't do a wrong to get to a right. You can't make a sin in order to do a mitzvah. You can't steal money in order to give it to charity. You can't justify bad behavior. A person's coming one half the time and say, well, that should be sheet. People are running to get seats. So two people start to push each other and they're fighting. It's my seat. You're justifying fighting to go learn Torah? Yeah, we have to go learn, Rabbi. This is not the Torah approach. Your path to do good must be paved in goodness. It's not for us to decide to break the law to keep the law. Now this principle will manifest itself in many ways, which I won't go into in detail, but there's so many times before we act, we have to ask ourselves, not how much good is going to come out of what we're doing. You have to ask yourself, how much bad is going to come out? How many sins am I going to have to do to accomplish the good that I'm planning? And if there's wrong, you have to abandon ship. But what do you mean, the project's not going to get done? It's not up to you, that's God's problem. God asks you to do right. If the only way you can do right is by doing wrong, it's not up to you to do it. God wants you to do right. God will have it, it'll get done through someone else in a different way. We cannot compromise the law to keep the law. Person steals a lulav. He sees the lulav on the chair, lulav in etrog, so, oh beauty, I didn't shake the lulav in etrog today. It's a big sign on the etrog box, do not touch personal property. Or book. Person wants to learn Torah. Please do not remove the book from the synagogue. Please do not take it. We makpid, we're concerned you shouldn't take the book. Well, I have to go pray. So that guy takes the book and he's praying to God on a stolen book. What are you doing? Well, I gotta pray. A stolen property. Shaking your love in it at all, but it's stolen. This you could, in so many different ways. The Pasuk is telling us this lesson. Tzedek, tzedek terdof. Even your tzedek, even your righteousness must be pursued in tzedek. Even your righteousness must be pursued in a righteous way. Even the good that you do must be done on a road that's good. Your tzedek has to be tzedek. The mitzvah cannot be tainted through sin. Hence, Torah philosophy teaches us the ends do not justify the means. A mitzvah must be pure from the beginning to the end. I just remind you of one famous incident, to just bring the point out clear, to solidify this point. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, to be the leader, to be the redeemer. It's a great opportunity for anybody. Moshe Rabbeinu abstains. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I can't do it, God. God says, why? I have an older brother, Aharon, and he might be offended because I'm his younger brother. He might get upset. Now, I'm going to be the redeemer. He's older than me. Maybe he was expecting the job. So how can I be the redeemer of Israel at the expense of the feelings of my brother? Amazing. God told him, don't worry, I guarantee you Aharon's going to be happy for you. Which he was. Only after Moshe heard that Aharon's going to be happy, he said, okay, I'll do the job. Look at this. If you'd ask me, I'd say, well, listen, to be the redeemer of Israel, what is a chut? What a mitzvah? So my brother's going to get offended a little way? He'll get over it. No, he's a tzaddik. What do you mean? So he'll get offended a little. What's you can't make everybody happy. Well, I just give up my career. I just give up my greatness because my brother's going to get offended. Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching, even so,
Even if you're going to give up a great opportunity to become great, to become Moshe, if to become Moshe you have to embarrass Aharon on the way, abandon ship. Tzedek, tzedek terdof. Your righteousness must be pursued in a righteous way. Another famous case that you are well familiar with was with the righteous lady, Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu was destined to marry Yaakov Avinu, as you know the story. And the wedding was already prepared and everything was ready to go. Problem was that Lavan was a trickster and he had other plans. He, instead of letting Rachel marry Yaakov, he was going to put Leah under the chuppah, which he did. He pulled the switcheroo. And Rachel and Yaakov thought about that. So they made signs amongst themselves. So when they go under the chuppah, Yaakov will ask for a certain sign, so he'll be sure that it's Rachel and not Leah, because Leah doesn't know the signs. So they preempted Laban's trick. They said, we suspect that Laban's going to pull this trick here, but we'll make a sign between us. You go under the chuppah and ask, what's the sign? You touch your ear, you touch your nose, whatever the sign is, then I know it's you. That wasn't the sign, by the way. Rachel starts to think to herself, what's going to happen? Leah's going to be under the chuppah. Yaakov's going to ask for the sign. She's not going to know it. Now what's going to happen? She's going to be exposed. They're going to cancel the wedding. How embarrassing, a bride under the chuppah. All of a sudden there's a scandal. No wedding. All cancelled. Guests. People. How can I do that to my sister? And she said, Yaakov Avinu wouldn't want such a thing to happen. Yaakov Avinu would not want now somebody to be embarrassed under a chuppah. It was a mistake. So she went to her sister before the wedding and gave her the signs. Sure enough, under the chuppah, Yaakov says, you have the signs, yeah, I got the signs, goes like this, goes like that, everything's calm, everything's quiet, the wedding goes off without any glitch. Now I want you to know something. Rachel did not know at that point that she was going to marry Yaakov. She thought that's it, she's giving up everything. That's it, Leah's going to marry Yaakov. And she was expecting to marry herself now. Which means she gave up her whole destiny. She gave up being the mother of Israel. She knew if you marry Yaakov Avinu, that's it, you become one of the matriarchs. You become like Sarah and Rivka. She knew the one that marries Yaakov is going to bring the tribes. So she said, I'm giving up everything, because if to become the matriarch of Israel, I have to embarrass my sister on the way, not worth it. Now again, if you ask me, I say it's worth it. So what? So now we'll get upset for a couple of days. Okay, so get over what? People don't get embarrassed? Get embarrassed, get over it. You give her a box of chocolates, a Hallmark card, kolastatz, finished. You kiss, you make up, but at the end of the day, you become great. No, I should give up my whole life, my whole olam haba, just so I don't embarrass. That's the extent it goes. Look how meticulous our forefathers were when it came to this principle. That the tzedek that they pursued was betzedek. It was 100% blot. There wasn't any wrong. Incidentally, once we're telling that story, I don't want to leave you hanging on that story till we get to the Parashat Bereshit, because it's a good ending to that story. It's a great ending to that story. At the end, Rachel married Yaakov as a second wife, which was good news. But even better news, she was barren. She wasn't able to have children. As you know, Leah was producing children one after the other, and Rachel was barren. And of course you can imagine the anguish that she had, not being able to produce children from Yaakov Avinu, the tzaddik. Eventually, she had a child, the first child being Yosef. And then she had a second Binyamin.
The Gemara says, In what zechut did Rachel merit to have children? What mitzvah did she do? What she must have done something good to generate a zechut to have children. You know what the Gemara says? In the zechut that she gave the signs to her sister, so that merit allowed her to have children.
I want to explain to you what I just said. It's a bombshell what I just said.
That means, because she did the right thing, at the end, she got rewarded for it, and she became a mother of Israel. But let's imagine if she didn't do the right thing. Let's say she would not have given over the signs, she would have married Yaakov, she never would have had children. And you know what would have happened? Yaakov would have had to marry Leah, take another wife because she wouldn't be able to have children, and all the tribes would have came from Leah, and Rachel would have ended up with nothing, with zero. Because she gave up and did the right thing, she ended up with everything. At the time she was doing it, she thought she was giving up a whole career, but little did she know, she was creating a career. So you see how important it is. We think, well, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose out. You won't lose out. God doesn't punish somebody for pursuing righteousness in a righteous way. God will not hold it against them that you did things straight. But how are we going to build the yeshiva? We need to take money from this guy that does all type of evil things. We need to take his money. He's offering us millions of dollars. If we pass up this money, the yeshiva won't be built. That's not up to you. The yeshiva will be built. On the contrary, if you take his money, now you're in trouble. Be patient, do it the right way, and you'll see how it'll turn out. Tzedek, tzedek, tzedek.
Later on in the Perashah, the Torah tells us that there's going to come a time when the Jewish people move into Eretz Yisrael, they settle it, the Amarta, and they're going to say, Asima alai melech, I want to place over me a king. They're going to ask for a king. And the Torah says, that's fine. Som tasim alecha melech. You can appoint a king. And the Torah gives us the rules of the king. He can't have too many horses. He can't have too many wives. He has to have a sefer Torah that he carries with him all day long. The Torah goes and says, if you want a king, it's fine, but you just have to follow certain halachot. The question is that in the book of Shemuel, if you study the Nabi, it says the Jewish people came to Shemuel HaNabi, the prophet, and they said, Shemuel, we want a king. And Shemuel starts to give them Musar, you want a king? God is your king. How could you abandon Borei Olam? Dare you ask for a king? That's wrong, it's not right. Borei Olam comes and chastises the Jewish people. So all the rabbis ask, what are you talking? The Perashah talks about that there's going to come a time when the Jews are going to ask for a king. God says in the Perashah, black and white, it's okay. Just follow the halakhot. And over here they come and ask for a king, and Shemuel starts screaming at them like they did the biggest Habon. Make up your mind, is a king a good thing for the Jewish people or a bad thing? So listen to what the Kli Yakar answers. It's a great principle that we can apply to leadership. The Torah says, yes, a king is good. When, listen to the words the Torah uses, there'll come a time where you're going to say, Asima alai melech, that I want to place a king over me. When a person wants to accept the authority of a king, where the king is alai, when it's over me, then it's good. That I'm willing to listen to his authority. That I'm listening to his direction. I want a leader to be over me in order that he should guide me. In order that he should navigate for me, right or wrong. That's good. But in the time of Shemuel, you know what they told Shemuel? Tena lanu melech. Give us a king.
They didn't say put a king over us. They said give us a king. What they were saying is we want to control him. We want a king that will tell the king what to do. We want a king that we could guide him, and not that he guides us. Shmuel was a tough leader. You couldn't bribe Shmuel. Shmuel was a tough rabbi. You wanted to give him a gift, he wouldn't accept it. You wanted to do him a favor, he wouldn't accept it. So you couldn't penetrate Shmuel. He was fire and brimstone. So they came to Shmuel and said, you know what? We want a king. What were they saying? We want a leader that we could, put a leash on him and we can guide him. Shmuel says, what? That's the type of king you want? If you would have asked me that you want a king over you, asima alai melech, that's okay. But to come along and say, tena lanu, just give us a king that will use the king conveniently, that's already avon. And that's the same thing with our rabbis. Rabbis are, by definition, spiritual leaders. But unfortunately, all too often, we find rabbis, instead of being spiritual leaders, they become spiritual followers. Following the will of a rabbi position is not a political position that you're elected and you need votes. In politics, they take a poll before they have an opinion. 51% think it's a good idea, so the president gets up and says, I think it's a very good idea. And if they take a poll, the next day it says 51% say it's a bad idea. You know, on second thought, I changed my mind. It's a bad idea. That's all. It's all politics. It's all trying to impress people to get votes. But in rabbinics, it shouldn't be like that. Even if 99% of a community says it's fine, it's the job of a leader, it's the job of a rabbi to guide them and say you're making a mistake. You're looking at it the wrong way. And even though they're going to be upset, and even though he's not going to find favor in their eyes, and even they're going to contest, it's not the business, it's not a follow-up. What do we need rabbis for? To be the spokesman of the people? Whatever the people want, that the rabbi should bang on the pulpit and say, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right. That the rabbi should become a lackey of the sibur? Of course not. It's the job of the rabbi to lead. And it's the job of the community to let the rabbis lead. To empower them. Not if a rabbi makes a speech that he should become precious, don't say this, don't get involved, keep away, we want to do it. I'm not going to support you, I'm not going to give you, I'm not going to... So the rabbis become gagged. They become muted. They become imprisoned at their own pulpit. The community must seek leaders, asima alai melech, that we put our leaders above us, to seek their guidance and counsel, not tena lanu. I'll give you a famous Mishnah that they say. There's a Mishnah at the end of Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah talks about a rabbi called Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. It's a story. So one day the rabbi was walking in the street, and he met a guy, met a layman. The fellow says, Shalom Alecha. Rabbi, and he answers back, Shalom Alecha. They bid each other, good morning, good morning. So the fellow asked the rabbi, where are you from? He says, oh, I come from a city of Hachamim, I come from a city of Sofrim, scholars. So the fellow says, Rabbi, why don't you come live with us, be the rabbi of our town, and we'll pay you an exorbitant amount of money. The rabbi's getting a nice offer. He answers, he says, impossible. Even if you'd give me all the money in the world, any bad elavim come Torah, I will only live in the place of Torah. End of story. The rabbi says, why not move to a community and help them? Why didn't he answer right away, no? What, there's no mitzvah of outreach? Obviously they were looking for a rabbi. So they see the rabbi, Rabbi, please come with us, we're going to pay you comfortably, everything will be fine. Why did the rabbi right away say, no, I'm staying where I am? What? If every rabbi would say like that, I'm staying where I am, there would be no rabbis in the community. Everybody's going to want to live in Mashadi. Everybody's going to want to live in Lakewood, Borough Park. What's going to be with the people? Why did the rabbi immediately reject the offer? No, I'm not going. So I wanted to explain like this. The rabbi understood the potential mess that he was going to get into if he would have went to that community. Because he saw the way he was hired. He just met the guy for the first time. Guy's walking down the street. He sees a guy with a beard and a hat. Oh, Rabbi, where are you from? Oh, I come from the city. Okay, you want to be our rabbi? That's it, I'm hired. You didn't interview me. You didn't question me. You don't know what you don't know what my philosophy is. You don't know anything about me. If you could hire a rabbi like that, what does it mean? That means you're looking to control me. You don't care what I hold, because I'm not going to have an opinion anyway. A rabbi is supposed to be hired, meeting, rabbis come and interview him, question him, analyze. You don't hire a rabbi, you see him walking on the boardwalk one day. Oh, who are you? I'm so-and-so from Lakewood. Okay, here's a contract. The contract, that's how you hire a guy. He said, if they hire a rabbi like that, rest assured they're not interested in the leader. They're interested in the rubber stamp. They want to put somebody at the pulpit so they can say, oh yeah, we have a rabbi. But they want to control them and they want to guide them. And that's to the detriment of the rabbi, the detriment of the community. It's a lose-lose. Everybody loses in that situation. One of the rabbis made a comment on the Gemara at the end of Sotah. The Gemara says that in the times of Mashiach, I'm going to quote you the exact language of the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Pene hador kifne hakelev." The leaders of the generation are going to be like the face of dogs. But I compare the leaders to dogs. And that's a premonition that's going to take place right before Mashiach comes. Saying leadership is going to be like dogs. So the rabbi, what does that mean? Leadership is going to be like dogs? What does that mean? So explain like this. You see a man in the street walking a dog. If you don't know any better, it looks like the dog is walking the guy. When the dog's in front and he's holding the leash and the dog is carrying the guy. So you say, oh look, the dog's walking the guy. When do you realize who's walking who? When you get to the corner. Now the dog doesn't know if to go right or left, so the dog turns around and the master signals, right, left. When you get to a fork in the road, then you see exactly who's leading who. Says the leaders in the time of Mashiach are going to be exactly like that. They're going to get up from the pulpit and they're going to speak and they're going to talk. Oh, look at that. They're leading the community. It looks like they're leading. But then when there's going to come an issue, there's going to come an issue of importance, and then the leader's going to turn to the committee in the synagogue. Should I say it or shouldn't I say it? Please, no, 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 Rabbi, don't get involved. Don't say anything. We don't want to have any, don't disrupt anybody. Then you're going to see, when there's a question, then you're going to see the rabbi's looking right or left, what should he say? Then you're going to see that he's being led, that he's not really guiding. And that's an unfortunate situation. And unfortunately, that's taking place in our times. And it might even be taking place in the Jewish community, in our community. When leadership becomes Muslim, when leadership has to become afraid of reaction of people and what they're going to talk and what they're going to say, and therefore they're gun shy. They're scared to make an opinion, they're scared to say something because, oh, you say such a thing, you're fired. Look, we don't need a rabbi like this. You have no job tomorrow morning. Just talk about nice things, talk about Judaism, talk about the weather, talk about, you know, story, Bible stories. Don't get involved in anything that's going to ruffle anybody. Woe to such a community that has such leaders. The leaders are going to be held accountable and the community is going to be held accountable. Because we asked for leaders, like in the time of Shmuel, give us a king. That's a mistake. We're supposed to ask for a king that's above us, that we have deference to his authority, that we're willing to listen to his opinion. Hasima alayhi. Based on this chiddush, I am compelled to discuss one issue in our community that has reached, in my opinion, crisis level. Although many people don't have the impression that it's a crisis level, but in my opinion, it's at a devastating situation. You're well aware a new fad has begun, I don't know how many years ago, and when it started exactly, that people are involved in making Shabbat parties. It's a mistake for me to call them Shabbat parties. It's probably more proper to call them Saturday parties, because Shabbat has nothing to do with the equation. When we were in school, we also used to have Shabbat parties. Shabbat party on a Friday, we used to come, you had the Shabbat Abba and the Shabbat Ima, we used to light the candles, drink some grape juice, that was a Shabbat party. Unfortunately today, Shabbat party took on a new meaning. I'm sure there's one tomorrow, and I'm sure there was one last week, and I'm sure there'll be one next week also. What's the dynamics of such a party? People get emailed. Come tomorrow at 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock usually on a Saturday, we're eating lunch. You're making kiddush. You're sitting with your family. 12 o'clock, come tomorrow. Bring a bathing suit. Shabbat bathing suit. We're going to give you drinks. We're going to serve you tequilas. We're going to serve you all the drinks you want. So we're going to spend Shabbat making all sorts of sins, getting drunk in all sorts of things that are anti the spirit of Shabbat. And these are people that went to yeshiva. I'd love to say that, yeah, these are people on the outskirts of the community that went to public school, they don't know what Shabbat is, they never heard of it, it's foreign to them. Is there really people in our community that don't know what Shabbat is? They don't know exactly that there's a certain kiddusha, they don't know that they went to school, they learned. So it's a double sin, that they themselves are sinning and they're causing others to sin. So somebody might tell me, Rabbi, technically what's wrong? Analyze it now, from the halakha, what's wrong exactly? You're not allowed to drink? What do you mean? Don't you go to Sabbath, don't you drink? And you tell me bicycles, what does Rabbi did say? You're allowed to do a bicycle. He always comes with a book, this Rabbi said it's okay. And look, we have it in the roof. So what's pool? Hey, this Rabbi says that it's okay to go in the pool. So Rabbi, what are you screaming? Background music to the goy, put on the music. We're not going to turn on the music, the goy. We tell the goy, put this CD on, put that track, make it a little louder, make it a little lower. So we're not really doing anything. What do you want us to do Saturday? We're not really doing anything wrong. Everything is being done by the maid. Everything's being done, you know, before Shabbat. What's the problem then? It's a good question. What is the problem then? Everything's being done really according to the halakha. So I want to tell you a hiddush. Learn this hiddush good. The pasuk writes, "V'shamru b'nei Yisrael et haShabbat." That the Jews are instructed to keep the Shabbat. La'asot et haShabbat ledorotam. To keep the Shabbat for the generations. What does that mean? How do you keep Shabbat for the generations? I always understood what a Shomer Shabbat means, but now you're telling me La'asot et haShabbat, it's not enough. You have to do La'asot et haShabbat ledorotam. You have to keep Shabbat for the generations. You know what it might mean? That the way you keep Shabbat, it has to be a type of Shabbat that will endure time. It's a type of Shabbat that is done in a way that the next generation will also keep Shabbat. But if you keep Shabbat in a certain way, that's going to cause the next generation to be mehalel Shabbat, then it's not keeping Shabbat. You have to keep Shabbat, you have to preserve the sanctity of Shabbat to make sure there's longevity to the Shabbat. Now I ask you, 100% mutar, goy turned it on, Shabbat bathing suit, drinking, we're making berachot. have special shorts that I bought for Shabbat, a special t-shirt that I designate only for Saturdays, all the loopholes. I ask you, when you have children prancing around the pool on Shabbat, drinking tequilas, what's going to be next generation? Now they're using goyi, now they're riding bicycles. Are we preserving the sanctity of Shabbat for the next generation? You know the way of people. The way of people is they progressively get worse. People regress. Is that going to make Shabbat more holy next generation or less holy? Well, I have a proof that it's going to make it less holy. Because it didn't start like this, ladies. Originally it started by people just coming around to a pool without music in the background, just relaxing. But what? The ante was raised. Now we'll just put a little music. Good. That's one generation later. It's not even one generation later. It's 1 year later. It's not even 1 year later. It's 1 week later. Look how fast they're progressively getting worse. And now you have the kids coming, so you have a cigarette. Here at a party, I need a cigarette. Look what happened. But that wasn't the original intent. No, we just wanted to make a little gathering. But such gatherings only lead to avon. Even though technically you're doing it now according to the halakha, but this Shabbat is destined to be lost. And as I said now, we're not dealing in generations anymore. In the olden days, it needed generations. Now we're working with Pentium, with Pentium speed. With an avon that's made, a mitzvah that's made today in the wrong way, already a month later, already you'll see the damage. And we're seeing the damage today. It's not enough to be a Shomer Shabbat. You have to be a Shomer Shabbat Ledorotam. Your Shabbat has to be a Shabbat that will ensure that your children are going to keep Shabbat. This type of Shabbat does not guarantee a Shabbat. If we have Shabbatot like this, in a short amount of time, there will be no more Shabbat. Shabbat will become extinct. Shabbat will be gone. And they say, but we had kosher. Look, Rabbi, oh, you want the tequila mix. Everything's kosher. We don't want to make avon. Getting drunk on Shabbat by a pool, listening to music, riding bicycles and shorts, socializing with boys and girls, is going to lead to the obliteration of Shabbat. Even though now it's with an eruv, it's with a this, it's with a that. But that's this year. What's going to be next year? Shomer Shabbat Ledorotam. And therefore I say we're in a crisis area. We're jeopardizing now that Shabbat is going to be lost from a large portion of our community, from our youth. Our youth have no concept. Shabbat is on its deathbed in our community. And we're looking for ways to be more lenient on Shabbat. Can I carry this? Can I go to... The terror alert has been raised now. Before 9/11, you can go to the airport, walk into security, nothing. Now you have to take off your shoes. Well, what happened? We have to be mahmir for a couple of weeks, a couple of years, because now it's not normal. We have to be very stringent till we neutralize, till we come back to the center. Now we shouldn't be looking to try to find loopholes on Shabbat. On the contrary, now that Shabbat is on its deathbed, we have to go to the extreme to make sure that we don't lose the patient. And then after we stabilize Shabbat, then we go back to the middle and do the normal things again. Then we can follow the halakha again. The pool, the this, the that. In a time of crisis, you can't start being more lenient. On the contrary, you have to be more stringent. We're going to lose the whole concept. Thousands of kids tomorrow are going to be going to these type of parties. Is this Shabbat? But I want to say there is hope. And I'll leave you with this. Now that the summer's coming to an end, I want to tell you, probably for me, the three greatest highlights of the summer. You're going to laugh at two of them, well, certainly at one of them, but I think in a different way. I was walking down Norwood Avenue one Shabbat, ate by my sister, and we're walking home. I saw a couple of men sitting in front of Steve 19 on the island over there, whatever they call it. I walked by. Bidiyuk, that moment that I walked by, their wives came out of Steve 19 with the sweater on, how do you like it? So they saw right what was going on, so they told their wives, go back inside. So it disturbed me. I understand, I give them the benefit of the doubt, they're not buying it on Shabbat. But they have a day off, so they want to go a little shopping. Is that Shabbat? What's going to be the next generation? A Shabbat like this, that when the parents come home, Mommy, oh yeah, I tried on something at Steve 19 today, I'm going to pick it up after Shabbat. What does that do to the next generation? I go on Shabbat. I'm not my mother. My mother was a righteous lady. You know, she didn't pay for it on Shabbat. I pay for it on Shabbat. That's what's going to become the Shabbat. So they think, loophole, I'm okay, you're not okay. You're a Shomer Shabbat, but you're not Shomer Shabbat Nedorotam. A few minutes after that, I saw some of the boys from Sharei Torah. Some of the boys that I taught in 8th grade. I don't take credit because I only taught them for a half hour a week. 8th grade boys walking down over there, we were dressed in Shabbat clothes. Beautiful boys. And I was forced to cross the street to compliment them. I said, boys, there's hope for our community. I know how difficult it is for you. I know all your friends out there now indulging and they're involved and they're on courts and they're playing and they're... What does it mean that we have youth today in 8th grade that understand that you walk down the road with a yarmulke and close up Shabbat? I said, it's a breath of fresh air. There's hope for our people. That it's not all look. To me, that was a highlight. You might think, Tehiel, that's a small thing, Rabbi. It's a very big thing in my mind. That it's not all look. That Baruch Hashem, there's still some youth coming up in the ranks that understand what a Shabbat is, and they're fighting City Hall, they're contesting the entire world. How difficult is the peer pressure for these boys? And when I complimented them, they got shy, they smiled, where's the rabbi overreacting, what is he talking about? They don't even realize how great they are. They don't even realize what they're doing. To them, it's a matter of fact, what? It's Shabbat, that's the way Shabbat goes. What am I getting all excited about such a thing? Because when you see the opposite for so long, you say, what's going to be? The second highlight was last Monday night. Some of the girls, I should say the majority of the girls, if not all the girls, from the Ilan High School, decided that in the summer, they cannot go for 10 weeks without learning, without advancing their education. So they made a pact amongst them that every Monday night they'll invite another rabbi, another rebbitzin, another teacher to come to another home and to teach them Torah. Of course, I delayed it to the end, but I was called upon Monday night to deliver the shiur. I can't tell you how beautiful it is to see young ladies in our community, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, all dressed modestly, all pure, pristine, naive, sitting all around in a school in such a clean environment. I want to hear what the rabbi has to say. Teach me about Torah, teach me about God. And I told them, girls, I know how difficult it is for you. I remember when I was young in Sharei Torah, I know what you're going through. Hey, all your friends, where are they on a Monday night? They're gallivanting in the streets. They're bar hopping, they're clubbing, they're going all over the place. And look at you, nerds. You're coming with your dresses and your sleeves, and you're sitting to a rabbi. What kind of excitement is this? You're being deprived of your childhood. They're stealing the fun of life from you. But I tell them, girls, you have to know, those girls are confused out there. They're lost. These girls have no self-esteem, drinking themselves drunk before they go to a party, exposing themselves in public. They're lost, they're gone. They have no idea what life is. But I guarantee you, if you pass this test of staying the course, and I know this firsthand, those girls are going to come to you one day for advice. Those girls are going to come to you and say, please, show me the right way. Mentor me, teach me. What a breath of fresh air that there's a future for the ladies, the young ladies of our community. That there are still spots in our community where there's Kiddushan, there's Yirat Shamayim. I'm not talking about in the mountains, I'm not talking about in the boondocks. I'm talking about in Deal, New Jersey, in our mainstream. That there is hope that Baruch Hashem, there's still balanced people with normal values. What a pressure these girls are going through. That they should be such a united force to do right. That's a very good sign for what the future is going to bring. But it's not easy for them. They need Yisuk every single day, 2 hours a day, to remind themselves you're doing right. Don't get fooled. Don't get sucked in. If you stick it out, one day you're going to be on top and they're going to come asking you for help. I know it, but my friends all did it. Today all my friends come to the Shiurim. Rabbi Eli, why don't you take me with you? Why'd you let me go? I thought you were my friend. But the pressure's not easy. That's the highlight of the summer. Because that shows with all the craziness that's going on, our religion will endure longevity. There's longevity. There's the door of time. There's a future. And of course the third highlight, ladies, is what takes place here on every Friday. This class over here is probably the most important event, in my opinion. I'm sure there are other important events, but for me personally, that takes place on a weekly basis. These are the mothers of the community. These are the grandmothers of the community. You come from a different world. Whatever the play, whatever the Yetzirah of your generation was, it doesn't come close to the Yetzirah of the generation today. You're the moral compass of our community. Baruch Hashem, that there's still mothers and grandmothers that are decent, that have the proper understanding of right and wrong. What a message you're giving your children when they know that you're coming every Friday. When you share the Dvar Torah with them at a Shabbat table, you're ensuring that our religion is not going to end in 2005. You're giving our religion bookshelves for the next 100 years. You're making sure that Judaism in our community will exist and will continue and will perpetuate. That's how important it is. Our children are in good hands because of ladies like you. Because of the values that you have and the sacrifice that you're involved in. Not only by coming here, but the lives that you lead and the like I said, the right and wrong barometer that you have, that you possess. And therefore I give you a Hazak Baruch and Be'azat Hashem. If we could remedy these situations, if anybody has influence over these people that are making these Shabbat parties, we must stop it. It's not for us to say, it's not my business, it is your business. Religion is everybody's business. It's incumbent that the leaders scream bloody murder on such a thing, on such a travesty. And it's incumbent upon the laymen to see to it that their children do not attend. God forbid our children should be on the roster of people that attend such parties. God forbid in heaven that our children's names should be on the list when they're reviewing the attendance sheets. God forbid such a thing, our children's names should appear. Sunday parties, the rabbis close their eyes to. But Shabbat parties, they cannot close their eyes to. And Be'azat Hashem, with your continued devotion and commitment to our religion and to our Torah, there will be, Be'azat Hashem, a future for Torah, for religion, for Klal Yisrael. Amen.